I thought tonight this is not going to be good, talking about the devil for 20 minutes, because as Scott read, you know, to talk about the devil for 20 minutes is to give that stream of consciousness too much power. So I'm going to quickly try and move away. We'll see what happens. The first time I ever had to give this particular sermon was at Ananda Palo Alto. And this very interesting thing happened. On Saturday night, I was resting at home, and David and Asha were supposed to be giving service the next day, so I had no idea what the reading was. I never know what the reading is unless I'm doing the sermon. And they were up at the village, and I knew they were up at the village. Swamiji was here, but they were coming back to give service, and we had talked about it many times. And at about 9:45 that night, my cell phone rang, and I looked, and I saw that it was David calling me. And I said to myself, I'm not answering the phone. I wasn't even home. I was over, I think some of you know, I have two homes, really. So I was over at the house we call Barry's house. It's about 15 minutes from the community. And I just ignored the phone. And I said to myself, he's calling me to ask me to give service tomorrow. I'm just not going to answer the phone. So about 5 minutes later, the phone rings again. And I said to myself, darn it, no, I'm not answering that phone. And then I'm starting to say to myself, Shanti, David knows you always answer your phone. You're never away from your phone. What are you going to tell him? I don't know, I said. I'm going to think of something, but I was in the shower. I was anything. And then it rang the third time, and I said to myself, you have to pick up the phone. So sure enough, he says to me, you know, Swami wants Asha to stay and do some transcription for him. So we know this might be impossible. By this time, it was about 10:30. Will you give service tomorrow morning? Now, this was many years ago. I think, you know, were it to happen now, I'd sort of swallow and take a deep breath and give service tomorrow. But many years ago, giving service tomorrow meant something very different for me. And I said to him, I have to think about it, David. He said, okay, we're driving. Asha's in one car, I'm in another. And we're going to keep driving. Call me back when you decide. And I said to him, well, what if I say no? Well, it was very interesting. Of course, you know the end of the story. I said yes. But I had no idea what the subject was. And when I wasn't picking up the phone, this is the truth. This is an absolute true story. I was saying to myself, what are you going to tell David? And I said, I'll tell David the devil made me do it. Then I go home and I open the, because I had to leave. I didn't even have the reading there, so I drive home that night. And I open it, and the topic is, does Satan exist? I mean, it was such an interesting play. You know, the word in Sanskrit is called lila, the way God plays with us and shows us all this delusion. And I thought, how interesting that I'm going to stand up there and try and tell David the devil made me do it. I couldn't help it not answering my phone. It spoke to exactly what the whole point about what is Satan. It spoke right to it. That energy in our lives, that force that sort of draws us inexorably into, we can use all of the words that we use at Ananda that you know, in an outward direction, in a downward direction, in a contracted way. It would have been so reasonable to say, look, it's 11 o'clock at night. I'm not even sitting with the reading. I don't even know what it is. I don't have access to any of the books or things I might read to prepare myself. Any of the stories I might have told. It would have been fine. David and Asha were both saying to me, we could understand you're saying no. And if Asha needs to drive back, she'll drive back. But that was not the uplifting, expansive, positive thing to do, though I toyed with it. And it took a huge amount of energy then, huge, to say, okay, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to stand up in front of that church and have it be on the internet for the whole world to see and talk about something that I'm not prepared to talk about. But it's exactly that force that happens. It's a very interesting topic about Satan and the devil and evil and negativity. It's exactly how a lot of people decide not to believe in God. Because the argument, the rational, logical argument that somebody would make who operates from a rational, logical place, which is really all about the mind and a huge amount about Western society, and really not even just Western society anymore. We've become so global. It's how almost everybody around the world operates. I mean, occasionally, I just heard a charming story the other day about children. There was a school, and people asked children to draw what they thought God looked like. And this was in some type of an environment, I don't remember what it was, where there were a lot of, I think they were African children, and a lot of Americans. And the American children, to the child, drew an image of some anthropomorphized version of God. A big man with a long beard. Most of them drew way up in the sky, way away. They drew themselves as a little person down below, looking up, separate from me. Or some of them drew God as a woman, which I thought was pretty great. You know, long blonde hair, purple or blue robes. But and I can't remember, I have to say, they could have been not Eastern Indian children, but American Indian or South American. I cannot remember where these other children were from, but it doesn't matter. The point is, they were children who had grown up in an entirely different way. And when they were asked to draw God, they drew pictures of the sun and the flowers and clouds. And they were in there. They put themselves in there, but they were part of a whole. And they really understood that God was in everything. It is how they had been raised. So when I say everything's become so global now, it's harder and harder to differentiate East and West, or even African in the West. Or, I mean, we've just infiltrated everything everywhere with really Western culture in a way. This has nothing to do with tonight's talk, but it does have to do with how consciousness changes. And interestingly, often, I want to say in the wrong direction, but as we all know, it's like this swinging orb, and it goes that way. Many years ago now, sometime in the 1990s, friends of mine wanted to go to Bhutan. I had no idea at the time where Bhutan was. I'd never heard of Bhutan, but I didn't care. I didn't actually usually care where I was going in those days. I had a couple of friends that I loved to travel with, and I would travel with them because it was sweet to be with them. But they always cared where they were going. So I just went along for the ride, wherever it was. This was a wonderful ride. And interestingly enough, we went in the very first year that the Bhutanese government would let travelers in. They had no Department of Tourism. They sit very close to Nepal, and they were very clear that they did not want Bhutan to become another Nepal. You know, where you see how these people are hiking, and, you know, doing all this mountain climbing, and they start, what are those camps called? Base camps. They have different base camps, thank you. And they're a mess. They leave all their trash. They meet so many thousands of people coming in to climb in the Himalayas, and they were committed not to do that. And when we went there, they had a king. The king had married five sisters. People loved their king and all of their queens. They wanted to stay in their country's uniform. It was charming. There was no poverty in Bhutan. There was no competition. Everybody just had enough, and everything was plentiful. It was an amazing experience. But the next year, they got television. And with television coming in, never mind now, I'm sure they're on the internets and everything. But it just dramatically changes what we think of as life. And it was really fascinating to see that. But let me get back to where I was about this notion of good, bad, right, wrong, evil, Satan, the devil. So many people carry this feeling, this question of how could it be if God is good? This is what the argument is. If God is good, how could he have created so much evil? Why would he have done that? And in fact, many people even ask the question, which is, I think, really essentially for most of us, an unanswerable question. Why did he create us at all? Why did he work so hard, which is the whole point, and I'll say this a little more later, about why there are two streams of consciousness, one that is uplifting, that is positive, that if we get into that stream, moves us back to our true nature as being one with God. That would be the road. We're all in that stream. We're consciously, thoughtfully, actively in that stream. The other stream, which is really part of original Christ consciousness, as we think of it, is what we would call Satan. It's evil. There's a force to it. But it's all part of the divine. It's not like it exists independent of itself, independent of that. It can't. It exists in not just a state of duality, but in a state of relativity. It does not exist. We can't look at it as an independent source of energy. That's impossible. Everything has come from that oneness, that overarching source that is to the divine. It is the omnipresent good, and it is over everything. Now, we know that because we know these teachings, because we've listened to Yogananda, and we had Swami Kriyananda, thank God, to explain these teachings, even to explain the Bible, so that we can all understand really what Jesus was saying when he came, and certainly what the masters, the other masters on our path, were saying. But the vast majority of people in the world are not hearing their teachings through an enlightened being. I think I've mentioned in here, we know I was very involved in Judaism growing up, very involved. I was looking for God. That was pretty clear. I would not have used those words. But I was hungry. My soul was hungry. And I was born Jewish. So I got really involved in Judaism to the point of insisting that my family obey certain Orthodox rules. And I can say now, looking back, I loved the rabbis. I was very close with them all, and the cantors who were in my synagogue over the years. They were thrilled. You can imagine how happy they were to have a sort of very energetic, positive little girl who was dying to know everything they had to teach. Really, we all feel that way. That's wonderful. So I got a lot of their attention and energy, and they were great beings, but none of them were fully realized. So what they were teaching was their understanding of what they were reading. It was much more of an intellectual, it was more of a projection, really, of their own thoughts, their own desires, their own needs. They were very good people and wanting to do good work, but they didn't have the opportunity to be near a true avatar. They didn't, maybe they did live when Jesus was here, but in this life I'm talking about. So what they were telling us was their interpretation of something. And I remember one time a very dear friend of mine whose family was just decimated in the Holocaust, just decimated. So she grew up with that very Jewish, the Jews have been persecuted, everything against the Jews is bad, a strong antichrist, which is what Jewish people are taught. And one day she was visiting me, and she came to service, and Ananda, she'd been there many times. And at dinner that night, she just burst into tears. And I said to her, "Do you know why you're crying?" And she said to me, "I don't even think my rabbi believes in God." It was so devastating for her to feel God's presence the way she had felt it in a church that she had trouble being in because she had to sit and look at Jesus. Very hard for her, understandably. But then to realize she was going home and would be missing all of the soul, all of the true inspiration that can flow. Now, I'm saying this to you to say that this is the argument behind, or what part of what starts happening. This is how people have been informed, who now come out and say, understandably, if there's a God, if what we believe in is God, why in the world would he also be creating evil? Why would he do that? And I started to say before the question that none of us can answer. Why does he even create anything? If we were all one with him and living in pure divine joy, why did he create anything? I can't answer it. Even in this very reading, Swamiji, you know, there's several layers of his expanded commentaries on these readings. And in one of them, he says, he just comes out and says, don't ask that question. It doesn't even matter. We're here. This is how he deals with it, at least here. We're in these bodies. Why not ask the question instead, how do I get back there? But you can see if somebody wants to make a rational argument against God. I have a very dear friend who was born during World War II when his father was away. And from everything I can understand, his father left a beautiful man, very funny, very bright, and came home a very cynical, dark, difficult, full-blown, violent alcoholic. And so my friend lived in a very abusive environment. His father was very abusive to everybody in the family, I think probably particularly to him. And as much as all these years that he's known me, he's come to Ananda a couple of times and tried other things, Buddhist paths, he so wants to believe, but he's very rational. And the question in his mind is always, how could this evil possibly exist? Why would I have had to have been born into this family and be abused if there's a God? And you can't make a rational argument. You can't say this isn't God's will for you. You can't start explaining to somebody about karma and reincarnation and how this could be an opportunity rather than an obstacle. Because here is a very interesting thing about what we're calling evil. You know, it's such a strong word, evil, Satan, even in our reading, even in the reading from the Gita tonight, darkness, that it's very easy to not relate to it in a way, because nobody in this room is an evil person. Nobody does evil things. Nobody feels like they live in darkness. Do you know what I mean? So you could just say, this isn't about me. So they're strong words, but what they really mean is every time that we are drawn away from, we could just say it simply, the light that is the divine. Every time we make a choice, and it can be simple, not that there's nothing wrong with, Marilyn and I were talking on the way over about different aspects of this. Is it a horrible thing for somebody to sit and watch a couple of hours of television every night? No, it's not a horrible thing, but is it uplifting, expansive, enlightening? Are there other choices that we could make? And then we would say, what are we watching on television? I cannot bear to have that television in my home. Literally, I can't. I think as I watch people sometimes, what do you call that? Surf. No, surfing the net. But whatever they do with the controls and go through. 90% of what comes up to me looks so violent that I have to turn away. People watch that all the time. Are they bad people? Of course they're not bad people. Master tells a story of one day where he had worked for days in a row to create this big celebration, this big event. He had cooked and cooked and cleaned and served. And he said he got into bed at the end of about three nights, and he was so tired, and he said to himself, oh, there's no way God would mind if I didn't meditate tonight. And then he heard what came after that. What came after that is, oh, you poor boy, you have worked so hard. Of course you can go to bed without meditating. And he knew. He said, I knew that was Satan. So it's not like it's something outside of ourselves. It's that force that compels us to go down that road. Now, I've been there myself, and I've allowed myself to go to sleep. Master said, as soon as I heard that, I got up out of my bed, I went to my meditation pillow, and I started doing kriyas. And he said after two or three rounds of kriyas, he said I was awake, and I stayed awake in pure bliss all night. That's the story he tells. Now, again, we're not holding ourselves necessarily. You see, we don't want to get into a place of criticizing ourselves, because what is that? That's just another way. As soon as you slip or you fall, there's always that voice that comes in that can tell you exactly why you should be disappointed in yourself. There's always that voice that says, you're right. You're not good enough in this way. You didn't do that well enough. Why did I let myself do that? That carping spirit. That really every single time there's anything that has to do with that negativity, anything, we can know that it's just time for us to notice, you know what? I just slipped into the wrong stream of consciousness. Again, in the car, Marilyn and I were talking, realizing that whether it's, I'm just going to use these words, but they're harsh words, evil or the devil, or whether it's that elevated light soul consciousness, they're all from the same infinite source. One is ego reinforcing, one is soul reinforcing. But they come from the same place, and it's directional. We don't have to beat ourselves up. All we need to do in the moment is turn the other way. Whenever we catch ourselves, instead of being stuck there, all we need to do is turn the other way. Just leave it. You know, when we're teaching people to meditate, we often say, don't get into an argument with your mind. When you sit to meditate, anybody who sits to meditate knows that within seconds, the mind is trying to bring thoughts in. And they're always simple thoughts. I am either having a deja vu or I know I've said it to you before. Sometimes I can hardly get through our masters in a prayer. Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, what am I making for dinner tonight? No Shandika. It just happens that way. We all do it, and we all continue to do it as long as we're in a body. We do it less and less. You know, there are times where you can sit down. I know one of the holidays this year, we do these two-hour meditations, 5 to 7 now. And it's just become a habit in Palo Alto that I lead the meditations for whatever reason. You know, when Asha's here and she'll get up and give a talk, but I lead these. And I remember one night, I could not believe it was over. I could have sworn I'd been sitting there for 5 minutes. So do we get blessed like that on occasion? Yes, but boy, is that pure grace. Most of the time, it's a little more of a struggle, but you have to say to people, don't argue with your mind. When the thought comes in, if you start saying, here I am again, having thoughts, I don't want that thought, go away, mind. Guess what? You lost the battle already. The mind will always win. It will. It's its nature to distract you. It does what it does very well. It's perfect at it. That's what it was meant to do. So I say to people, a thought comes in, just let it go like it's a cloud, like it's that light, like you could puff on it and it would go away and bring yourself back. Another thought, let it go, just keep coming back. That's all we can do. And this is a very similar thing. When we find ourselves, whatever it is, having a judgmental thought about somebody, speaking in a gossiping kind of way, you know, not treating somebody with the kindness that we would like to, not remembering, really hard to remember that God is the doer all the time. Those are just words to us. How many of us even do it a minute a day? Remember that God is the doer. If I had remembered that the night that David was calling me, I would have picked up the phone and said, I know what you're calling to ask me, and absolutely, yes, of course I'll do it, because it's not really me doing it. It's God doing it. All I need to do is pray and meditate. I could have meditated for 2 hours, which I did, by the way, but I could have known it earlier, and said, it's in your hands, Divine Mother. If it's in my hands, I'm going to mess it up. I'm going to think I have to memorize things, remember what to say, then wonder if I know enough, as opposed to just the final prayer. These are your children. Speak to them. And really, the words are there. It would be true for any of us. How many years have we been on this path? We would all know what to say. Probably any one of you could stand up here and talk a little bit about Satan if we just remember to get out of the way and let Divine Mother speak through us. Now, here's another thing about all this that is very important to remember. I didn't look at my watch when I started, so I have no idea where I am. But somebody will have to tell me when I've spoken about 20 minutes.
There's the clock.
Yeah. Okay, maybe I'm going 15 minutes. I'll speak 5 more minutes, and then we'll stop. I'll stop. Suffering, the divine purpose of Satan is to continuously show us how to keep turning back towards God. The divine purpose, not what Satan has in mind, right? Not what that, because again, really, it's just the ego. It's just the mind. That's what these, what we're calling, again, it's dramatic, we're calling it satanic thoughts. But it's not like go out and kill somebody. It's not rob a bank. It's not be as dark as you can be. That's not, again, who we are. Even those people, though, even those people, remember Master said, anything that we see anybody doing, we've already done it, or we still have to do it. Anything. It's chilling to hear those words, but he said it and he meant it, because we've all been tossed out and we're all just finding our way back, and we'll have to go through all of these things. But here's the good news. The divine purpose of all of this is to point us in that direction. Just like if we would say, is it horrible the first time a child touches a stove and it's hot? They get burned, they get hurt. That, of course, we know that's not good. But look at what they learn. Every time they do something, how else do they learn these things? You could tell a child over and over and over, don't touch the stove, don't touch the stove. But how many of us have touched the stove? Whether literally or figuratively, we've all done it. We very seldom learn by other people's mistakes. Really, very seldom. Even when people are telling us very wise things, if you think about it, most of the time we have to live through it ourselves, which is exactly what can torture a parent when they want to pass on their wisdom to a child. Or somebody like myself who does coaching and therapy type work. And sometimes I'm sitting there and I have to say to myself, don't tell them the answer, don't tell them the answer. Because it won't mean anything. It doesn't mean the same thing as if I help show them the way to discover it. So once we've discovered it from the inside out, we have it. So these ways that we suffer, this is what Master meant when he said there are no obstacles, there are only opportunities on the path, because everything becomes an opportunity. The affirmation for this week, when I first heard it, I thought, what is generosity? Sometimes I wonder if Swami, like, did he put these together on purpose? And I have no idea what Swamiji was thinking about this, nor can I exactly call up the words. Would you open that book and read the last line of the affirmation for in their, whatever.
For in my happiness for them lies inner freedom.
So this is the truth, not just some sweet little, oh yeah, I feel so good when other people are happy, which maybe we all do. That's not the point. But the point is, I mean, not that little kind of, gee, that's great, you know, which I know, and it's a wonderful feeling. Today I told you we built the foundation for this mandir, and Marilyn had gone out and gotten some food so that we could all take a lunch break. But there was also this unusual type of pizza that I had made for dinner in the community the other night. It was left over, and it's really good. It's a gluten-free frittata, and then you make pizza on top of it. It's really delicious. And I was sort of encouraging everybody to eat a lot and to finish it. And at some point I stopped and I thought, what is that that gives me such extraordinary joy when other people eat? It's amazing. It's crazy, but it's so deep. It's, I'm sure, part of this Jewish root, you know, to just feed people. That makes you feel happy. That's one thing. But this line that says, for in their joy or for in their happiness, I find inner freedom. It's saying that if I... Can you read it aloud one more time?
For in my happiness for them lies inner freedom.
Okay. In my happiness for them. It is saying that when we realize that we're all part of the same whole, and that as we offer somebody something, love, devotion, pure love, pure devotion, as we learn to give at that level, we are free. Because probably the two most important things that we can do to combat, I mean, there's several things that we can do to combat this extraordinary draw on us. Extraordinary. Marilyn had a very cute phrase today. Everybody was asking me as we were doing this work, because I finally said, look, I need to go home. I really have to meditate on this, because I have to leave in a couple hours. What's the topic? I said, does Satan exist? Everybody started talking about it. But Marilyn just told me in the car, she had a cute line. I left before she said it. But she said, she just thinks of it that God is the CEO and the devil's in charge of the Department of Illusion or Delusion. And it's adorable. It's exactly how to think of it. But it's real in our lives. It's not like we're going to get rid of that force pulling us. That's why Sister Gyanamata said so beautifully, I never pray that God will change my circumstance. I only pray that he changes me and my consciousness. That's what we all need to do. We need to pray that our consciousness changes so that we are no longer drawn to set ourselves in that stream and go along with that flow, which people do all the time, right? This is not a passive act. Being on a spiritual path takes great courage, great energy, great commitment, because there is a force tugging on us. It's as real. Remember I said two streams of consciousness. It is every bit as real as moving towards God. And of equal force, that means we have to overcome that. We have to get conscious. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh wrote a book that is a prayer. It's just a book of prayers. It's like this: prayer for opening a door, prayer for turning on the water, prayer for closing the door, prayer when you wash your hands. And for years, I looked at that book, I thought, this is nuts. But today, it came to me, just today, I have that book on my bookshelf, but just today I realized it's absolutely inspired. It's brilliant, because it is in doing that that we constantly remind ourselves, little act by little act, God is right here, God is in everything, God is now right here, now I'm opening the door, God is with me, that God is the door. I mean, when we just say it, they're just words. But if we could literally go step by step to remind ourselves of these things, soon it moves from our mind, it transforms our consciousness, and we know without a doubt all the time that there is nothing but God anywhere, ever. That we are not the doer, God is the doer, God is what we're doing it to. There is nothing but God. You can take that out as far as you want. And I think I shared with you the experience that I had with the deer. Does anybody remember when I took a walk with the deer? I'll just tell you one more time. This is such a beautiful example of this. I'm telling you this story because this is what we can all do. This is nothing I did that anybody can't do. I'm saying this. We're all caught in the same delusion. Of course we are. When we're not caught anymore, we're not in this body. 2 years ago, I did a month of seclusion. Doesn't sound like a lot, but it was a lot. I was completely unplugged and completely alone. And during that time, I developed a practice of consciously and thoughtfully seeing God in everything. I wish I could say I lived like this every day, but I don't. I would look at the ocean and I would say, I'm looking at God. God is the wave. God is the ocean. God is the sand I'm standing on. God's in that tree. God is in this road as I'm walking home. God's in that dog that's walking. I just practice it, but with devotion. Oh, there's Divine Mother. There's God. There. I mean, it was a beautiful thing for me. For 3 weeks, constantly, I was just alone. I had literally no computer, no phone, no nothing. So I could do this a lot. And then I was walking early, very early one morning on the perimeter up at the village. There's a road that goes all around. It's about an hour walk of the village. And I was doing that walk. And this deer stepped out of the woods. And I have a very difficult story in my mind about a colleague of mine who was in a car driving, and a deer came running and got in her car, and he killed her by trying to get out, shaking its head, and caused such brain damage that she died. That happened years ago. But it stuck with me. And I got really frightened. And I thought, oh, I'm just going to turn and look at the woods and maybe she won't know I'm here. And I turned, and then I said to myself, what are you doing? For 3 weeks, you've been practicing. God is in everything. So I turned around, and that deer was not any further from me than where Marilyn is, maybe even closer. And I just looked into her eyes, these huge, gorgeous brown eyes. And she just stared back at me. Now, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I swear she smiled at me. I mean, I really, and she and I took a walk. Mm-hmm. And we would walk a little ways, and then we'd look at each other. We were right here. And it dawned on me, the only reason that could happen, we walked for a little while, then she headed into the woods. Bharat told me later that they have a certain territory and they won't go outside of it, because I could never figure out why she left me, because we were so one. We were one. If we had seen each other as other, that could never have happened. But we didn't. I had to remind myself. Then I came back and I remembered that it was just God meaning God. I didn't, it sounds so in my head when I say it, but it wasn't. And she and I could do that. Now, a deer will never do that, ever do that. So we have to develop this practice, and we have to do it with great love and devotion, not like there's God, there's. But really, every time we look at somebody, we see the divine. We look at that tree, we see the divine. You know, that's why these nature games that Bharat does are so charming. I just led a workshop up at the retreat, and the man, I didn't have my camera with me, so I borrowed another man's camera, and he just sent me all the pictures. And there, and I'm not like this. I don't usually do this, but there, I mean, so the fact that it got me, all these people who are really literally hugging trees but looking like they are perfectly in tune, or bowing with their head right on a flower. You know, up at the meditation retreat, it is so, those gardens, if you haven't been there, please go. They are so exquisite, and they are inspired. And it was so beautiful, just realizing the truth, realizing, not thinking our way there, that God is in everything. And every time we find ourselves in a little bit of a dark place, every time we find ourselves suffering a little or causing suffering, just say to ourselves, oh, I stepped into the wrong stream. I don't want to be in this stream. Bring ourselves back out. That is just, Swami calls it, he compares it to fog in one of his analogies, but he calls the devil the fog of ignorance. And it's all we need to tell ourselves. It's real, but it's no more real than this other stream. And it's very easy once we start learning that and practicing this to say, I'm not going there today. I'm going to close now, but I meant to bring my laptop because I just somehow on my computer last night was watching four singers up at Ananda Village sing this Satan song from the oratorio where one person's the devil and then Chaitanya always has the part where he says, get thee behind me, Jesus did say, and he sings with this big voice, Satan, know ye not. I can't do it now. I wish I could sing it because I would love to. It's such a powerful piece. And it just says, Satan's there, but all we need to do, I forgot, I didn't bring my laptop with me, I meant to, because I would have shown it to you, that all we need to do is get bigger than Satan and say, no way, you are behind me. I'm in front. I'm leading. I'm going where I want. I'm going. God's love is all I need. You can't tempt me, just like St. Anthony, just like Jesus, just like Moses. All these saints were tempted at some point. Just say, no, you cannot tempt me. What you're offering me is everything of the world. And we all know where that's going. I'm headed for God's love. I'm going to listen to my soul call. That's where I'm going. Get thee behind me, Jesus did say, just constantly to Satan, that we can see manifesting in ourselves. No, I'm stepping up to this right now and right now and right now with great love, great devotion, and great joy that we're exercising our free will to do that, to choose the light, to say it over and over. I am going to choose the light, lightness, expansiveness.